Ja, so Podcasts machen voll Bock, ey.
Hallo und willkommen zur 22. Folge von Open Court, dem Podcast des FC Bayern Basketball, powered by BayWa. Heute zum zweiten Mal mit niemand anderem als Andrea Trinchieri. Im ersten von zwei Interviewteilen blickt der Headcoach zurück auf ein schweres Jahr 2021. Er verrät, warum Weihnachten für ihn immer auch eine Zeit der Opfer ist, erklärt, warum sich der Cheftrainer aufrichtig bei Nachwuchsspieler Jason George entschuldigte, beschreibt eine bemerkenswerte Verwandlung bei Paul Zipser und vieles, vieles mehr. Viel Spaß dabei.
And today I welcome for a second time here at Open Court, Andrea Trinchieri, coach. Thank you for coming again.
Hopefully I won't be langweilig because it's the second time.
Well, has there ever been a time where you've been langweilig in any way?
It happens.
It happens?
To everybody.
Well, we'll see today, I think. We're sitting here, Christmas just passed. And I know from a good source within the organization that your family was here. How does a typical Christmas look at the Trinchieri family?
There is an old saying about what it takes to be successful in whatever you do. And this is coming from an old, wise, deep person from Belgrade. He's a professor conditioning and strength, PhD, one of the brightest mind I ever met in my life. And he always said to me few sentences that is like they're engraved on my skin, like a tattoo for the rest of my days, you know? And he said that behind the success or a successful career of a pro athlete, of a high-level coach, or whoever is chasing dreams, there is big injustice towards all the people and towards the same person for what he had to sacrifice and give up. And why I'm telling you this now? Because the Christmas should be a moment where you don't think about the job, but in this moment I can't do it. So my family had to cope with my bad mood, with my brain that was not fully dedicated. They are great in this. I hope that one day I will be able to give back whatever they give me in this sense. But usually we eat fish on the 24th. And at night, then we open the gifts, Santa's gifts for the kids. And then we have a typical Italian Christmas Day lunch that you eat from A to Z. Everything. Here we cut it because we are on a mission, so abroad, but usually you have tortellini in brodo, you have prosciutto, you have homemade pasta, you have everything. So, but we had very good fish. I found very good fish for the 24th and I cook it. And but then I had practice at 4 o'clock. So.
Yeah, because I was wondering, because you have all these different nationalities kind of mixed into your family. So, but presents are on the 24th, not the 25th, like your mother.
No, in Italy, you have 24 at night and 25 the whole day, basically. This is how it's usually you do it. 24, it's with the reduced family, let's say 6-8 people. And on 25 is 55, 75 people. You know, you have everybody, you know. And everybody brings something to eat, you know. And this is something never-ending. It's a six-hour meal, okay? But here I was only with my family.
Kind of sounds like Thanksgiving in the States, what you do on 25th.
Yeah, very similar.
Yeah, I heard about that because my sister, one of my sisters-in-law, she lives in Arezzo. So I know a little bit about
that. They
eat
very well there and drink even better.
Yeah, she works at La Viala. I don't know if, you know, if you heard about that, this little country thing they have there. Mm-hmm. So she's big on food and mm-hmm. brought stuff too. We were there on the 25th mm-hmm. as well. Do you know what we do in Germany on the 24th for mm-hmm. like food? There's only like basically two or three things we do.
Tell me.
Well, either you just go really trashy and you go like for Bockwurst and Kartoffelsalat, so mama doesn't have to do anything at home. Or you go all out. We have duck, maybe goose.
I like these trashy things because sometimes it's colliding things that it's Feiertag.
True, yeah.
But you have to cook for 8 hours?
Yeah, exactly.
So I believe it's kind of, you are very efficient.
Alles in Ordnung.
Yeah. Alles in Ordnung. Super efficient. So I like this. So maybe next year.
But actually, there are two other options. You can do a fondue. You know what that is? And you can
fondue with the
With the oil, not with the cheese.
So bourguignon.
Yes.
Okay.
Or we can do the raclette. You know, with the cheese.
This stuff. Is with the cheese. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It's something to enjoy together. Makes sense.
You enjoy together, and like I said, mama doesn't have to be in the kitchen for 8 hours. Mm-hmm. And that's usually reserved for the 25th.
Yes.
Where you have the big meal. Not with 50 people, I guess, but just with dinner.
No, 50 was joke, but I did 20 for sure. 20
well,
at least.
Not even 20 over here. It's just basically like the parents, the kids, and maybe grandpa, grandma. That's basically it. So when you had the time back in the day, you know, what was important to you on Christmas? I mean, it's for a lot of people, I guess it's a time of reflection, looking back, or just kind of time for family.
I never had a Christmas off because we always play. Or you play the 23rd or you play the 26th. Sometimes in Italy you play on Christmas Day, not on Boxing Day. So basically, I don't know what is a Christmas without working.
And before you worked? I mean, you had all these types of different nationalities.
We usually, on the 22nd, when was the last day at school, we took the car, that was when I was 13, 14, we took the car, went to Croatia, at our summer house, and have family dinner and family lunch there. So I had, let's say, 7-8 days at the summer house. This is what we were doing, and we were doing fish on the 24th and a big meal with a lot of side dishes. Turkey was something because my father is American.
Yeah.
My mother is from Europe, Croatian, with, you know, so we tried to put together everything, you know. So it was a huge turkey with gravy, lima beans on one side and bacon, and some pasta dishes on the other side. So it was, I had good memories.
What's the best present you ever got?
Wow. Okay, one time, I believe I was 12. I had as a present a book that I believe I read 90 times.
Which one was it?
It's not a super big. It is the first book of Wilbur Smith. Okay. And in Italian, the name is Come il mare. It's about a captain of a rescue ship, and I remember the book now, page after page, because it was a journey through the oceans of the world, and I fall in love for the sea. And then another one, I receive an envelope with the. For the next summer, a trip to the States.
Hmm. Who gave the book to you? And who gave the trip to you?
Dad and mom and dad.
Okay.
So we had inner circle. Mom and dad was for the children doing major gifts. You know what you need. You know, tennis racket, sneakers, or basketball, or books, or was always a mix. Okay, something to make you better, something to make you enjoy, something to teach you, and something for your future. It was nice. They put a package. Very nice, and now it it comes to my mind because my dad just passed away, and 3 months ago, and now when you make me think about that, it's even more overwhelming.
Yeah, I can imagine, because I mean, the first thing you said was the sacrifice, and that you kind of parentheses hurt people who are closest to you at Christmas because of the job you do and the sacrifices you have to make and they have to make. So can you, as a father, you know, just basically recreate what your parents created for you? Can you create the same thing for your family? Is it something that kind of, I don't know, makes you, I don't think you can't sleep over it, but I guess it's kind of, it's gnawing at you, right?
I'll be very straight. Whatever I do it in order to give the best possible future to my kids. Okay, this is a can be a catchphrase, okay? But because I don't believe you can be a good coach nowadays without studying a little bit of sociology. We are swimming in this big pool and people is changing faster than what you think. So I'm a little bit concerned about the future of young people. I had a lot of opportunities. Some of them I blew them. Some of them I was able to keep, to be successful or, you know, or to be efficient with the opportunities I had. And if I have to imagine the society in the next 10 days, I'm a little bit concerned about the climate change, about politics, about the thing that scares me the most is if people doesn't have the money for healthcare, what is going to happen? It's already happening now, 2021, in rich environments, that people, the people that doesn't have the money to pay doctor medicines, they simply die. And I'm afraid of that. I'm afraid that I just want that my kids can choose. The biggest freedom that I had to pay for that, to choose what you want to do. And I would love to allow them to have the same freedom.
So this is basically the drive behind everything you do, and you're ready to sacrifice stuff.
Catch up your dreams.
Yeah.
Follow your talent. Don't let anybody else define what is success for you. Being father these days is very difficult.
I can imagine. And obviously with you, it's also the distance, right? I mean, you're not there every day. How do you keep in touch with your kid?
Oh, of course. So they have a well-disciplined, because my wife is Frau Rottermeier. Okay. So they do sports, they study, it's okay. And I try to be part of that, you know. When they play tennis game, they send me the video of the game, or, you know, I try to use the modernization as an advantage, okay? And but it's never the same. So I feel guilty. I feel for losing these years with them, and every year is heavier. And but still, I want to be sure that they can choose what to do.
That's a pretty good segue, because do you know what these days between Christmas and New Year's are called in Germany?
No.
Zwischen den Jahren.
So what does it mean?
between the years.
Between the years.
So, and you know, usually it's this time where you don't really know what day it is. I mean, obviously during the season you don't know that anyway.
But no, I don't know when it's morning, Tuesday, Monday, Tuesday, I don't know.
Yeah, see, that's what I mean.
So and I know that there is a game in 2 days.
Yeah. See, that's zwischen den Jahren for everybody. You don't know. It's just, you know, Christmas is gone. You know, New Year's is around the corner. You're still pretty full from eating all that stuff. And it's this time where you reflect. You kind of look back, you know, of the year that passed. But I can imagine, your year ends in the summer when the season ends, right? Or do you have this in you that you look back now on the year that was, or do you, you know, do you really put that off till the end of the season? And it's the season, your year. Is it your measuring unit?
No, I try to analyze the thing live because it's very, everything is very quick. Mm-hmm. So, and I have a lot of things going on, a lot of things happening. So I'm afraid if I condense everything in, let's say, one day that I think all over the year, I lose a lot of things. So I take notes of, I keep notes of the things that are important. And I'm trying to be better. Not always I'm able to do it, but I'm trying to. If I have this as a rule, if I'm not able to be always present when I'm there, I need to have great quality in what I'm doing. Mm. So the summer, I dedicate a lot of time, basically everything, in order to build up the bridges that I cannot build up during the when I'm working.
So you're not looking back at the year right now, but during the summer, you that's where you try to put as much life into the summer as you basically can. And during the season, there's just the season. The year end has no real meaning to you.
No. The only thing I like is New Year's resolution.
Oh, you do? Okay.
This is something that is a mental trick, but because you can have every Monday a new resolution, you know. But let's say that everywhere in the world, New Year is a big thing. So let's use this to motivate yourself with a target.
Did you ever read anything from the Stoics? From the Stoics, like Marc Aurel, Stoicism.
Ah, Stoicismo.
Stoicismo. Right? Because I came across one thing, I think it was Marc Aurel who said, like, only a fool just kind of, you know, goes with his resolutions and does not start the very day he thinks of what he wants to become. So I find it fascinating that you say, all right, I like it that we have this certain date. It doesn't really matter which date, but that we have this one date and that motivates us. Because I would imagine that for you, you want to make a player better every day. So you expect them to have resolutions every day, right?
Good is the enemy of excellent. And the comfort zone where we all love to be is the enemy of your next step. Okay? So sometimes you need to trick yourself in order, because not every day you have the strength, oh, I have to take my ass out of the comfort zone. Okay? Not every day you have this drive. There are good days, there are shitty days, there are days where you say, okay, maybe today I can just let it go, okay? So sometimes you need to make some mental tricks to yourself, knowing that you're making a mental trick, but you fall in the trap and you're happy to fall in your trap, okay? And provoke yourself for a new thing, for raising the bar, or just fight your habits. That is the toughest thing. Your bad habits. We all have bad habits.
And I guess it's part of your job to trick your players into not trick, but you know what I mean. To kind of push them to.
Yes, it's the hardest part of the job, because sometimes you push somebody that doesn't want to be pushed.
And some players react to this, and some react to something totally different, right?
Yep.
Let's look back to last year, even though, you know, you're not doing that. I want to do it right now because it's the year-end podcast and everybody is zwischen den Jahren, except for you. How long ago, I mean, not in, in t- time frame, but how long ago is the series against Milano for you, or the finals against Berlin? Is it a totally different life, or is it still fresh in your memory? How far away is it?
You know what is a parsec?
Oh yeah, yeah. It's just space. one parsec away.
They are very far, but I can zoom.
So you zoom just can be there.
So they are very far, because I don't believe that. I try to take the best or the most out of it, and then I put it in the closet, but I didn't lock the closet. So if I have to zoom in, I'll do it. And I do it. For good memories, for bad memories, for motivation, for drive, for everything.
I'm asking because one memory, obviously, is Paul's. Paul's not injury, but it's a sickness. Is it something that has stayed with you through the year? I mean, obviously, forever.
Yeah. Forever, and only when he's going to get back on the court and I'm going to see him walking on that court in a real game, that can mitigate my feelings about that. I hope that nobody can live what Paul has been through, and nobody will live this again. Because it was life. Sometimes is unfair. You cannot get anything about it. You don't do anything about this, but it is like this. So he was blooming in an unbelievable player, and something just an invisible hand, huge hand, took him away from everything. And every day I see him around, it's a good day for us. And this is not only for me. I see his teammates and even new players. I see a smile with 65 teeth, not 32 feet, when they see him coming in the locker room. It's his story is better than one of the best book you can read. What is life? How you should live your life. Yeah, we are.
I had him in the podcast, I think it was a month ago, and I was just taken aback of how analytical he was about it all. And then he said, well, you know, I was sitting there and they told me, okay, this is the best guy that can do this operation. I'm fairly young. I'm fit. If anybody's going to beat this, it's going to be me. And I was like, dude, I don't know what I would have done. I would have been afraid, you know, I would have cried, whatever. And he has this stoicism about him. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Do you think that the team really is rallying around this? Because obviously a lot of the players weren't there and they know maybe the story and they see him working. But is this something that has given this team strength? How would you
believe
describe
that it? The day he's going to come back will be one of the most inspirational day for all of us.
Yeah.
I have no doubts.
Did you see?
I don't want to have any expectation.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for that day.
Did you see his early workouts? He was talking about, you know,
I see every day his workout.
Because he was saying, like, I went in with Emilio and I kind of tried to turn my head left and I fell down.
I like this topic very much, so I will tell you.
Yeah.
How human beings are unbelievable. Paoli was always a great talent. He had one of the best and most economical shots. When I say economical, his release was something on the shot. One of the best in Europe. That size, basically unstoppable, unguardable.
Mm.
And he was always a little bit laid back, you know? He's cool.
Yeah.
And I will never forget. So he started the last season bad. Okay, he was not in shape. So one of my duties is to be the bad cop sometimes, you know? So I had to do something to wake him up, you know. So I said to him, okay, every day, so you are not in shape, you are not playing well, not in practice, so every day you have to make 500 threes any given day, day in, day out. Okay, okay. After 3 days he came to my office, can I talk to you? He was killed by this, you know, because it's a very heavy drill mentally. It's langweilig, okay? Yeah. And he's being an artist. So you cannot go to an artist and say, I want your masterpiece today, 6 a.m., 7 p.m. So they do the things when they feel. You know, remember the word the spleen, you know, it's about your emotions, how, when. And, you know, that drill you give me, you know. So, you don't like it? Not very much. Okay, so give me your best effort. And we take away this. Okay, okay, so he started practicing with great intensity. But he was never a ferocious player in practice. You know, the player that you can see coming from Serbia that when they miss a shot, they curse the family for 5 generations. Okay? Yeah. On a missed shot, wide open shot. Mm. So he was missing shots, but he was for a good living, you know? Great guy, great talent, NBA, you know, funny guy. And now, after whatever happened, he missed a shot. He's a criminal now. He's so pissed off when he missed one shot. Okay. Now, he said to me, I said, how are you, Pauli, today? I had practice, but on defense, I was not good. Pauli, you never play defense in your career. Me? So how? He's a totally different. He's so committed now.
Okay.
And this is really a lesson for all of us. So, you know, I don't want to say that we have all to live like this is the last day on earth.
Hmm.
But take something out of this, I believe, could be important.
Yeah. I mean, Paul is still there. Mm-hmm. You know, that's great. But last year's team is gone. And I remember you saying last year, oh, I want to take all these guys back. All these guys need to come back. And following it by, I know it's not realistic, but I want them all back. And I think every coach has that in his career, that he has these teams where he grows very fond of these teams and, mm-hmm. and they kind of stay with him for years and years to come. Was last year's team one of these teams for you where you say, oh, if I'm in a rocking chair in 30 years, there's going to be a day where I think about this team? Or is this team something that stays with you?
Last year was a really specific year because we found a way to put a team, very strange team together, okay? And when I realized that many of them could not come back, it was a little bit sad. It is difficult, more difficult for me to build again everything, but it is what it is. So I don't want to focus on things that I cannot change.
I mean, I didn't mean it like, oh, I would love to have them all back, but you know, I think, or maybe it was just me, but when I was still coaching, I was always kind of a little like a romantic that some teams, you know, I love these teams I coach, you know, and they stayed with me. It wasn't like that the year after that or 2 years after, I was like, oh, I wish I could have them. But these teams kind of changed me as a coach as well, and I kind of learned a lot.
But I don't want to live in the past. And I don't want to let it happen that I'm not going to try with every team.
Well, nobody says you don't have
no,
to try.
No, but it's human.
Yeah.
You had a great season. I'm sure that if Pauli wouldn't have, we're going to be German champion.
Hmm.
I was sure about that. Okay. So it was the perfect season. We won the cup, game five, one shot from the final four, and the title in the German league. So it's a peak. But I have a new team, and they need me. So don't want to lose energies in being romantic, even though I'm romantic like you, but I have to fight it.
You really fight it?
Yeah.
Well, because it hurts your everyday work now, or you just don't allow yourself
sometimes
to look
at it? You say, oh, I have to start over everything. I have to change the system because I have to. They are different players, so you have to find the right fit for the players. But it is like this, so.
Was that time after the series against Berlin for the group to say goodbye, or was it just basically you just go out your separate ways?
We burned the candle from both sides.
All right.
So basically, after the last game, we were so tired that we just say hello and said bye, sorry. We just said bye and we move on to have some individual time, you know, with your family, with your kids, and understandable.
Mm. How long was the time for you before you really started working on the new season?
I'm not a guy that knows how to enjoy. I'm improving. So basically, after the last game, I was already thinking about the new season.
But you have to unwind. I mean, you have to do something. You weren't like sleeping in the Audi Dome during the summer. You were at home. You talked about, you know, building the bridges, you know, for your family and stuff.
But I write. I write a lot of things.
Oh, okay. You write a lot of stuff down then? Okay.
No, I write what I always do like this. Season ends. I do a very deep analytics. What wasn't right, what I want to keep, what I want to improve, what I would never do again. I write it down and I close the chapter. But while you're closing this book, there's another book opening about the next season. You have to think who you're gonna sign, how you're gonna play, blah blah blah. So it's a never-ending story.
But I guess it's I mean, I get what you're saying, but I get the other book is kind of be opened simultaneously to the other one still being open because...
No, but you have to go and open it again
to
see, oh, in that day you did this, okay? And you said that this is not something that you want to do again. So you have to link the things.
But don't you have to, even when the current season is still going... I guess you talk to Daniele about next season, new players, whatever. So aren't there like both books open simultaneously, you know, the end of the first book and then the next book is already starting?
More or less, but still.
Yeah, I know what you mean, yeah. So can you talk about one thing you're not going to do ever again that you learned last year? Or is it too private?
No, I cannot.
Okay.
Because if I say to you... I'm going to do it.
Oh, you're going to do it? So, okay. Well, this really gets, it's almost like a what's it called, a string theory and stuff, where it gets too deep. So the new book gets opened last summer. When did you kind of know what story would be written? When you know which players are in there? Or when do you start to really, you know, think about what's going to be in there?
The truth is said that whatever we planned didn't happen yet.
Basically, just like last year. Remember last year you told me like...
No, but we never had the team we planned.
Yeah.
Never. Never one day. So this is a catch-up season from day one. Injuries, COVID, again, ups and downs. So basically, whatever we planned is not ready yet. So it's a cake that needs to cook a little bit more in order to be good.
And people are stealing your ingredients you want to put into the cake.
And the problem that you're still playing, there's still games are coming, and you have to just, I'm just navigating. I'm not planning.
I think you said in one interview that you're like hopping from island to island in the ocean.
I cannot see too far.
Yeah.
And I'm just waiting for the day that Paul is back, and that maybe that day will close it to be the circle and I can move to the things we were planning.
So can this team actually get substantially better under these circumstances? You know, because if you're really just trying to survive, because there's a game every other day and you can't really practice and people are missing and who knows what's going to happen with the Omicron variant, I guess your job's pretty much impossible right now. I mean, it sounds to me anyway.
It's a little bit different than what it was.
Yeah.
So I won't say impossible, but it's very difficult and sometimes it's overwhelming, but I don't want to lose faith.
Are you the kind of person, you know, some people, when stuff really gets out of their control, they just say, all right, I just do the best I can and we see what comes out of it.
I would love to.
Although you did the opposite, but it just totally stressed you out.
I'm trying to get there.
Yeah.
Okay. And Paul is always inspiration. If from being laid back to be a biting player that is cursing when he misses a shot, I believe it's polar opposite. So if he did it, I can do it.
So any progress on that front, or is it
still? Some days yes, some days no. The growth is never linear. You make two steps forward, three backwards, two on the side, again five up, down. It's growing pains. I didn't expect anything different.
To see, when you talk about this, all the stuff that's happening, and then, you know, going two steps forward and one step back, does this change the goal the team has or you have for the team, all the stuff that comes in?
I have to say that Marco was great in this. He gave us goals that can be pursued even through adversities. And he just reminded me those goals, because now the road is a little bit bumpy. We are not in the best moment. Basically, we are in a shitty moment. And sometimes you just need a reset. And he was great giving at least me a very clear path to follow.
So I guess he kind of, how to put it, I guess he moves away from...
You said something that is very important,
yeah,
but sometimes this can be misunderstood. Okay. You said, oh, you just have to say, I'm going to try to do my best, whatever.
We do the things I can't control.
But as you said it, it's a little bit cheap. Okay?
Yeah, okay.
So because it's too generic. So I have to do my best every day, being creative and not saying, not looking to what you don't have, but looking to focusing on what you have and build from that. That maybe it's like that you want to build your summer house on the beach and you start the plan, the project says, I do it with concrete. But now we have a shortage of concrete, so I have to do a wooden house. But maybe you need to make a different design for a wooden house. So you can say there, oh, my best is what doing the house with the concrete. I don't have concrete. I don't do it. No, I want to change what I have to do with different material and adapt the design the plan with a different material. This is trying to do your best.
Actually meant it kind of that way, that you not that you like say, all right, that's all I can do, you know, if it's not great, that's it. But you know, to me at times when I get overwhelmed with work or whatever, there's a certain calm to it, I think, that when I know that the storm is like really blowing and I don't really know what to do, mm-hmm. and I feel it, like it's out of my control, that I really know, okay, I don't have to stress what I'm doing. I just do it now, step by step. And for me, sometimes it gets clearer the harder it gets, you know what I mean? That you can really focus on this one task, one step after another, where if I don't have the pressure, I kind of jump all over the place and try to do all the stuff at once.
Makes sense.
You know, sometimes for me it makes just sense. Helps when it comes.
Makes sense. But this is more when you have time. But we have a game every 48 hours. Opponents, game to win, deal with losses, deal with injuries. So jumping all over the place is a little bit complicated.
I actually like it better when the pressure is on, so I get more organized. You had a couple of instances this season where, how to put it, you kind of blew your top off. You know, the game in Chemnitz where you got thrown out, the situation with Jason George, where people are saying...
completely different things.
Yeah. And I think people look at this and they're like, all right, he's just losing it. And see, he's out of control. But I think as a coach, there's much more to it. I wouldn't say
let's go step by step.
Yeah.
Let's go, Jason. So, I did a mistake, and I didn't hide behind my mistake. The first thing I did, it was, I apologize. And then I tried to explain to Jason why I did a mistake, okay? So, you should never touch a person, okay? Because I touch him. I had a physical contact without having the desire to hit anybody. But I see Jason as my son, but he's not. And this is my biggest mistake. And when your son is not ready to take an opportunity that you don't know that is going to be there every day, you try to wake him up. Especially when you have the example of Paul. He had everything, and in one night, he didn't have anything. Mm-hmm. So, it's my mistake. I'll do whatever I can that this doesn't happen again. Okay. But my job is to push Jason to be the best version of himself. And sometimes young players don't know how to be ready, how to be ready to chase their dreams. They all want to be a professional player. They all want to live making the money through their passion, but they don't know what it takes. And my job is to push them every day, and believe me, it's very hard. So I was feeling really bad, okay? But one person, one player, told me, I understand you feel bad, but Jason should know that the worst thing for a young player is to be ignored.
That's true, yeah.
Okay, he's not experienced. He can do this. And just, you look at him like through a window. He's made of glass. And this player, maybe to help me, our player said to me, he has the luck to have somebody that cares about his future more than what he cares. still, this doesn't allow me to do things like this.
I think you have to paint the picture. I'm not sure everybody saw it. So it was like, it was against a game against Baskonia.
Yes.
And there was a situation where it's a turnover by Jan Marko, right?
No, the problem was the team was playing like shit.
Yeah.
He could play 10, 15 minutes in Euroleague, just being focused.
Mm.
He stepped on the court. He was not ready. It was not his mistake. And I was trying to wake him up with physical. I shake him like I would shake my son. No hit, nothing, okay? He was unaware of what's going on. And he was a little bit surprised, okay? And just because he could play 15 minutes that game. Because the players in his role were not performing.
Mm.
He just need to be ready to play.
But was after this turnover and this double layer.
He didn't get back.
He didn't get back, that's what I was getting at.
He didn't get back like somebody else.
Yeah.
But if you know your role, you are at the grandstand of basketball. You're 20 years old. They give you a chance. Grab it.
So it's basically, look, you need to grab this. The other guy's not going back, but yeah. I can't really, you know, I can't change them. I can still coach you.
Yes.
That's basically it. So did you apologize right afterwards, after the game at halftime? When did that happen?
I apologized as soon as I saw him.
Mm-hmm.
I let the thing cool down. I was feeling very bad for that.
Mm.
Because I tried to jump in his shoes.
Yeah.
I don't expect anybody jumps in my shoes, okay, but I told him this will never happen again, but I'm gonna sit on your back every day in order that you try to take every opportunity that comes to become a pro player.
Did it happen before at any other point of your career that you touched the young player?
Millions of
players. I mean, yeah, obviously, yeah.
This is a physical game.
Yeah.
So there's contact. It happens sometimes. Yeah. So, you know, I hug players. I touch players. They hug me. They push me sometimes. When I show how to set a screen, you know, it's there's nothing behind this. Like somebody can, that never played, can interpret it.
Mm.
It's still not hiding from my responsibilities, not drifting away.
And I think we have to make clear, it wasn't a Bobby Knight kicking a player moment. It was just basically a little too much at a time where you cared too much, maybe?
Yeah, definitely.
Das war sie, die sechste Folge der zweiten Staffel von Open Court powered by BayWa. Wenn euch diese Episode gefallen hat, lasst uns gerne eine Rezension da. Zum Beispiel Apple Music und jetzt auch Spotify. Empfehlt den Podcast gerne weiter und falls euch ein bestimmtes Thema oder Gesprächspartner wünscht, schickt uns eure Anregungen gern an opencourt@fcbayern.com. Vielen Dank für eure Zeit und bis zum nächsten Mal. Damit dem zweiten Teil des Interviews mit Andrea Trinchieri. Wir alle hier bei Open Court wünschen euch einen fulminanten Rutsch nach 2022 und schon mal ein frohes neues Jahr. Macht's gut.